from the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Later this hour, you're invited to Richard C. Hoagland's birthday bash here on Coast to Coast. And next hour, Simeon Hind, crop circles, remote viewing. With a new twist, here's some quick stories of the day. The first case of mumps connected with a nationwide outbreak was confirmed now in Colorado. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment says a 45-year-old woman from Douglas County became ill with the mumps on April 14th after making two car trips to Iowa. The recent outbreak of mumps started in Iowa and then spread to surrounding states, including Nebraska and Kansas. There are now more than 1,100 cases in Iowa alone. In a rare video posted on the internet, Al-Qaeda in Iraq leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi swore allegiance to Osama bin Laden and said any government formed in Iraq would be merely a stooge. He also mocked the U.S. military in Iraq for what he called suicides, drug taking, and mutinies, and he warned that worse attacks were to come. The video released just days after Iraq named a new prime minister and a high-profile audio tape from bin Laden appeared on Arab television seemed a deliberate attempt by al-Zarqawi to claim the spotlight again following months of taking a lower profile. It also came just one day after a triple bombing at a resort in Egypt that killed at least 24 people, including 21 Egyptians and three foreigners. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has said his country is ready to share its nuclear technology with other nations, and he made the offer during a meeting with the visiting Sudanese president. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice condemned the comments. Earlier, Iran's top nuclear negotiator threatened to suspend cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog if Tehran faced sanctions over its nuclear work. The UN Security Council has set a deadline of April 28th for Iran to freeze its program of uranium enrichment, which has been the focus of concerns that Iran would acquire nuclear weapons. And if the United States somehow attacks Iran, Iran claims that they are going to blow up oil pipelines in two Central Asian countries. And they say they mean it. So that's another one of their threats. The King of Jordan, Abdullah, tells a Spanish newspaper that Jordan is interested in a nuclear-free Middle East, saying that Israel must disarm its weapons if peace is achieved. Israel, he says, will not need such arms. The Jordanian king said his country is interested in a nuclear-free Middle East and urged the international community to pressure Israel to dismantle its arsenal. In Alton, Illinois, a 16-year-old boy stabbed a woman in the back with a stolen steak knife as she tested her blood pressure in a pharmacy. She went inside the pharmacy. Her husband and son stayed in the car. She was flown by a medical helicopter to St. Louis University Hospital with a 5-inch blade lodged in her back. Surgeons removed the knife. The teen, who's in custody, had stolen the knife from a nearby store. He did not know the woman. He merely chose her randomly because he simply wanted to stab someone. The record Atlantic hurricane season last year can be attributed to global warming. That, according to several top experts, leading a U.S. government storm researcher, and they also say that this year could be a bad one as well. You know, there is one voice that you hear more often in the cinema than any other.
Step into another dimension, a brand new journey through sight and sound. Enter a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas.
They know its face.
Stay here. I'll be back.
They know its mission. But there's one thing they don't know. This time, there are two.
Orson Welles used all his genius to create Citizen Kane.
The story's about a publisher.
RKO 281. The story of how the greatest film in history almost never made it to the screen.
See why TV Guide, Rolling Stone, and USA Today all agree 24 is the best new show of the season.
It began with 16 survivors.
Let's do it!
It became a national phenomenon. And the number one show in America.
This Wednesday, it all comes down to one final vote and one incredible night of TV. The Survivor finale is so amazing, so top secret, we can't show you a single second.
Indiana Jones is on the quest of a lifetime. But for some adventures, one Jones is not enough.
Dad? Junior?
Don't call me that.
A race across three continents. Have the adventure of your life. Keeping up with the Joneses. Due to violent content, parental discretion is advised.
And in a moment, you get to meet the man behind that voice, Don LaFontaine. Don LaFontaine is the voice that launched 1,000 movie trailers and helped define the art form. His voice has been heard in movie theaters all across the United States. You just heard some snips there, lending his talents to more than 4,000 movie trailers, including Batman, Terminator 1 and 2, Indiana Jones, The Godfather, and all of the Rocky films. His booming voice is as familiar to most of us as the names Tom Cruise or Harrison Ford, but hardly anyone recognizes his name, Don LaFontaine. Don, you bring excitement, I think sometimes more than the movies. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks, George. Nice to be with you.
Tell me a little bit about your career. How did you get started in this?
Well, I sort of backed into it, actually. I was a recording engineer. I learned that craft in the service back in the early 60s. And I was up in New York in 61, 62, and I was working in a recording studio. And I was assigned to work with a young fellow named Floyd Peterson, who himself had just gotten out of the Army. And he had this idea of doing radio commercials for movies. Now, this was revolutionary because at that time, by the early 60s, movies were advertised only in two mediums. That was the trailer, the previews of coming attractions, and print, the newspaper ads. They did no television advertising at all and no radio advertising, really. And so Floyd had this idea of doing these spots for movies, and he was working on Dr. Strangelove.
Okay.
And I was assigned. I was assigned to work with him, and we just hit it off. We had like minds. We were both equally insane, I guess. And shortly thereafter, I left the recording studio and went to work with him. We became a two-man operation, selling these ideas to radio spots to the movies, and it caught on very rapidly. Went from a two-man operation. In 2 years, we had our own building and about 30 people working with us. It really grew very, very rapidly. And along the way, I found I had this penchant for writing, and that helped. And then one day, a guy who was supposed to do some spots for us for a picture called Gunfighters of Casa Grande didn't show up, and I had to present something to Metro the next morning. So I went in and recorded it. I had written it, so I knew what I wanted to say. And they bought it. I took the $82 and ran like a thief, and that's how it started.
Do you get a feel for how powerful, how successful a movie is going to be just from the copy that you read or write in the trailer?
No, not really, because it's, we're trying to maximize whatever the movie has. The trailer, obviously, the trailers, previews of coming attractions, and the TV spots obviously have the benefit of being able to pull and cull the very best of the films into a 2 or 3 or 4 minute piece and cut together very excitedly. So, you know, that it's in some ways could be construed as misleading. I think sometimes the writing saves the picture, at least for the opening. That's about the best we can do, is get the initial seats filled. And then after that, word of mouth takes over and the picture is pretty much on its own. The audience makes the decision whether or not it's going to be a hit or not. The copy is, I don't know. I've been around it for so long. I really don't even associate it with anything but, you know, getting the word out there.
Do you change it, the copy?
Sometimes, but only most of the time now. I'm just dealing with tense. Sometimes these guys will write something and they'll start in the past tense, and then they'll go into the present tense, and then they'll go into the future tense, and they're all over the place. And you're saying, you know, let's settle on some point in time that we can all agree on. And that's the major problem I've come across recently.
Don, you remember when they said that the Beta machine or the VHS machine was going to kill the movie industry? And then they said cable was going to kill it, satellite was going to kill it. It's still pretty strong, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what's actually happened is that, the innovation of these things has forced both of most of entertainment mediums to keep raising the bar constantly. Television has had to come up to compete with film, and film has got to be better and better to outshine television, to get people out of their homes and into a theater. And what's happened is, I think that it's been an overall benefit as far as the quality of the entertainment that's going out there. I'm not saying that everything is art, but it certainly is interesting, and it's pushed all these new avenues like CGI, the computer generated images, and all of these other technologies that are expanding the whole motion picture and television industry. I think it's really forced it along, that competition.
When you were a kid, you didn't have the same voice, did you?
No, I didn't. Actually, I was a boy soprano until I was 13. And I was about 4'9". And my mother was washing dishes. And I said, "Mom, I'll help you with the dishes." And in the middle of a sentence, my voice changed. And it was rather ludicrous because I was, as I say, about 4'9". I had little Lulu curls hanging across my forehead. And it was just ridiculous that this huge foghorn voice was all of a sudden coming out of this diminutive character. But I had to live with that. It took me a while to adjust.
Can you imagine the young Don LaFontaine then with a boy voice going, "In a moment, in a movie world."
I can't imagine myself doing it then.
What's happening with trailers? Are they changing at all? I'll tell you why. John Ziegler, a friend of mine at KFI, who does a program in Los Angeles right before I do, said that he thinks the trailers are changing, that they're going from what were all voice to maybe voice and inserts of the movies now, and that they keep changing direction. Is that happening at all, Don?
No, this has been... we did no narration trailers 35 years ago.
Right.
That is just one of the formats that are available to the guys who cut these things. In many cases, if the film is strong enough and is not necessary to say something, especially if a film has got a great, you know, word of mouth going for something like Mission Impossible 3, there's not much you're going to have to say about that. All you have to do is throw some images out there, say Tom Cruise is back, and you don't have to say that. You just show some images and say the title, and you're going to have people come to the theater. The trailer makers try to be as judicious as possible in what they say and how they say it, because they don't want to go way overboard and become too engaged in hyperbole to just oversell something. So they many times try not to say anything at all. And I agree with that. I think it's a more interesting way of going in many cases.
Sure. Now, you've done all the Rocky films, and I understand there's one more final Rocky movie coming out, maybe the end of December, maybe the early part of the winter in February of next year.
Yeah, I haven't been asked to do anything on that recently, and that might not be. I'm not the guy anymore. I was for many, many years. Yeah. I had a wonderful run at the thing, but now there are other people that I haven't managed to have killed that are working very well in the industry. There's like George DeLoyo and Ashton Smith, to name two, who work all the time and are doing, I think, the lion's share of the trailers now. So there's a good chance I won't be asked to do that, and I'll just have to... cry into my pillow at night.
Well, what does your day consist of? When you're busy and you're doing a lot of trailers, tell me what the day's like.
Well, most of the stuff I do now is network stuff. I do a lot of stuff for Fox and CBS and NBC and UPN. And most of the things I do are those shows. And I do a few other things, like I do the voice on America's Most Wanted and a show called World's Most Amazing Videos. But most of my stuff is done... for the networks. I work out of my home. I have these ISDN lines, so it's these dedicated phone lines, which we're all working on right now. And I just come downstairs, sometimes nude if I want to.
Flip a few switches, and there you are.
Flip a few switches, and the stuff comes across the fax, and I step into the studio and read the stuff, and then go back and watch a movie or something.
In the early days, I bet you used to have to drive around then to all these facilities and studios.
Yeah, I certainly did, and that was really tough because when I first came out to Los Angeles in like 1981, when I first moved out here, I still had a production company. I had actually been working as a VP at Paramount up until that time, and I came out here and I had a production company, and I was trying to do trailers and also do the narration at the same time, and that rapidly went south. I finally gave up the production company because, fortunately, I was doing so much narration. But I was doing so many sessions during the day and driving around the city of Los Angeles. You can get pretty tense by the end of the day. And so about, around 1990, I got a limousine, and I was very concerned about how that was going to be received, but everybody loved the idea. They thought it was quite amusing. So I had the limousine that was driving me around for about 11 years before I finally established my home studio. But, yeah, that could be crazy because my record number of sessions is, what, 26 in a day?
26 in a day?
And about 110 spots. So, you know, that can get a little rough after a while.
Well, I was going to ask you, most of the trailers are what, 30 seconds or a minute?
Well, no, the trailers themselves are usually run 3 to 4 minutes. The previews are coming attractions. The stuff that I'm doing now currently is mostly 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 10 seconds. You know, the promos for these shows on television. Very rarely a 60-second spot. So most of those things are shorter. But trailers, no, they're trailers are...
And I call a trailer anything that would be on television too.
So it's a different. It's a matter of semantics. We call them promos. Yeah.
All right. How many takes do you have to go through, Don, or do you get an overzealous director when you're there who says, "Give me 40 of them"? Okay.
Oh no, very rarely. No, normally we're done in one or two takes usually.
You know when they're good. They know when they're good.
Yeah, it's such a formulaic process now. What we get here is I receive a script, and then they have produced the spot over at Fox or CBS or NBC, and it's complete. It's got pictures, it's got dialogue, it's got sound effects, it's got titles, it's got everything. The only thing that's missing is the narration. And I hear it in the headphones. They play it to me, and I actually just drop the narration in between the dialogue or wherever it's necessary, and then they just go and mix it off, and away it goes. I've seen spots that I did at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I've seen them at 5:30 on the air.
That's fast.
That's how quickly they can move, yeah.
What has been the highlight of your career in this industry?
Longevity. being able to stay in this industry for as long as I have. I've been blessed. I've been very, very lucky. I think the arc of my career is something that can never be duplicated because I was just in the right place at the right time, fortunately with reasonably close to the right tools, and was part of an industry at its infancy and have been with it through its entire growth. It's been 43 years now, 42 years. That I've been at this, and it's just been amazing to me that I've been able to dodge as many bullets as I've been able to, and not suffer the consequences that a lot of people have suffered. You know, where they have a short-lived career, and then it goes, you know, into the pooper.
Is it a competitive industry that you're in?
It's one that people love to get into because it's really not what you consider a lot of hard work. And it's very popular to get into because we're very well paid, obviously. And I don't consider it competitive. I don't feel like I'm in competition with anybody. That might not be a feeling shared by other people, but I don't feel like I'm competing with anybody. I think there's plenty of work for everyone. And I really am happy to hear new voices come along. It's rather exciting, and I'd rather...
Good for you.
Yeah, and I like to hear more women working. That's the only thing that bothers me is I think there's some tremendously talented young women out there who could bring an awful lot to this game and aren't given the chance that they really should get.
Well, let's hope that changes too, Don.
Yeah, so do I.
So the next time we turn on television or go to a movie, chances are we may hear you?
It's possible, if I get lucky again, yeah.
Well, flip those switches, and I thanks for being on Coast to Coast, Don.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There's a giant in the industry, Don LaFontaine, and what a set of pipes, I'm telling you. The good Lord up there gave him a voice that you cannot duplicate. His website, by the way, is donlafontaine.com. No need to spell it. All you have to do is go up to coasttocoastam.com. It's linked up right there. And just take a look at some of the wonderful things that he has done in his 40-plus year career. It is absolutely remarkable. When we come back, we're going to have a little birthday bash for Richard C. Hoagland. We're going to open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to wish Richard C. a happy birthday, too. I may mention his age once, only once this year. I did it way too much last year, he tells me. We'll be back. You know, I saw this story, and I just had to tell you about it. A Romanian woman has become the country's first legally registered witch. She's 31. Her name is Gabriela. She persuaded authorities there to accept witchcraft as a profession after months of negotiations. She simply says, the authority sent me home, told me it was ridiculous at first, but we finally reached a deal and registered my company as dealing with astrology and connections to the spirit world. Witchcraft is extremely popular in Romania, where many people in rural areas still believe in vampires there. And then Peter sent me an email yesterday with an EVP clip I want you to hear. Listen closely. He's from the Eastern Shore Paranormal Group. And he says, George, this is a ghost of a little girl. She seems to like cats because she was commenting on her newest kitty, Shanti, a fluffy, soft Persian. You have to listen closely. You might be able to hear, I really like this kitty. She died now, the girl, 6 years old, in this house that we picked up this EVP of scarlet fever. Now, here it is. Listen really closely to it. We'll play it for you one more time. As with the most EVPs, kind of hard to hear on the radio, but you can hear the words. I really like this kitty. We'll be talking to Peter during our open lines on Friday a little bit more about this. And, well, those Mars rovers, they are still working. Spirit and Opportunity continue to do what they're doing. NASA says they're going to start getting some more information soon again from the Mars rovers. Matter of fact, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, look under the email listener section where the NighthawkZone.com folks have sent a unbelievable graphic animation celebrating Richard C. Hoagland's birthday. Take a look at Richard C. sitting atop one of the Mars rovers. In a moment, your celebration and ours with Richard C. Hoagland. We wanted to devote the rest of this hour to someone who has been very important all these years to Coast and to you. His name is Richard C. Hoagland, and today is Richard C.'s 61st birthday. Richard, happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you, George. Thank you so
good
much.
Good to have you with us. You know, Richard, in the movie Contact, Ellie, played by Jodie Foster, was talking to that extraterrestrial who masked himself as her father. You remember that scene?
Vividly.
He said one of the most profound things. He said, when talking about the apparatus that she used to travel the stars, he said, we didn't build it. It was given to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about you. You, in those wonderful mysteries of ours, you were given to us. But unlike extraterrestrials, you were given to us by none other than this man, Art Bell. Hi, Art.
Well, hello there. So the face that frequently, very frequently, talks of Mars has developed some mysterious new fissures.
There you go, Richard. Art Bell here to wish you a happy birthday.
Aw, thanks, Art.
How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great.
Glad to hear it. I remember a couple of years ago when you went through a big flu. Well, I took a couple of 15-hour plane flights, and I'm just getting out of it now. I've really had a bout with it. But 61 years old, you're ahead of me.
And I'm going to stay ahead of you, unfortunately.
There you go. Congratulations, Richard. Really, I mean it. You've been, as George just said, you've been given an, you know, to the program, and you've been sort of a fixture now for, my God, how many years?
It's been not long enough. You know, guys, without you interacting the way you do, pulling information out, presenting it the way you do, none of this would have worked, and I would have had a very, very boring time doing this. So I want to thank you guys.
Well, thank you. Without this program, this kind of information simply wouldn't be out there, period. So that's absolutely true.
Well, I wish you well, Art, on your new adventure. I kind of envy you, because doing this show from halfway around the planet is something that has never been done before, and you're the guy to do it.
God, it's exciting, Richard. It really is exciting. And hopefully I'll have an opportunity to interview you, aged as you may be,
I'll have to put my cane up and, you know, limber up a little, but I'll try to muster up to it.
All right, buddy. Congratulations again on making 61.
Thanks, and hopefully I'll be around for a while.
Hopefully we both will. Take care, my friend. And George?
Yes, sir.
I think we've got perhaps a date tomorrow evening. Of course, I missed this last weekend because of the flu, and I want to update the audience. So if you can cut a little time aside tomorrow evening early in the program, we'll do that.
You got it. We'll talk to you then, Art.
Happy birthday, Richard.
Thanks, Art.
See you later, George.
Okay, Art. Now, that I wanted is just a little bit of a surprise for you, Richard.
that was a surprise.
I know how important that was. I want to read you an email I got in from Kevin out of Arizona. He says, "Hi, George. Because today is Richard C.'s birthday, please allow me to offer what I believe may be his greatest contribution and his lasting legacy, which is his unique and unparalleled ability to get people to open their minds to the possibility of something that they might not otherwise even imagine could be possible. Such is the testament to the power of imagination of what could and what may actually be. In this regard, I'm reminded of Einstein's quote, 'Imagination is more important than knowledge.'" And that's from Kevin out there in Sholo, Arizona. That is you, Richard C.
Well, I'm really glad that Kevin is out there, because there's a lot of Kevins, and they're basically the folks that keep us going. I mean, when you're trying to present information that the culture as a whole doesn't even understand is available, and certain parts of the culture are working very hard to keep from being available, it's this audience, George, that you and Art have brought along, this incredible national campfire, as I think I've called it a couple of times, that really keeps those of us who are at the cutting edge of trying to push back this envelope and make available what is being hidden, that basically keeps us going. So, Kevin, thank you so much.
I feel like this is your life, Richard.
You know, I said to Robin earlier, if he does a Ralph Edwards on me, I'm going to really get him at some point.
I was looking for a 99-year-old guy who would have claimed to have been a dear relative of yours or something.
Oh, you mean like the interview last year with a certain friend of ours?
Uh-huh, when Cronkite called in.
Yes.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland on his birthday. Hi there.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening.
This is one of your neighbors from the east side of the mountains.
Well, welcome to the show, and why don't you wish Richard a happy birthday?
Happy birthday, Richard. I just wanted to tell you thank you for the way you bring everything to us in layman's terms where we can understand it, and your bulldog tenacity. Once you get a hold of a story, you hang on to it and don't get sidetracked. And I want to thank you from all the coast-to-coast listeners, and happy birthday and another 30.
Thank you so much.
Great. Hey, did you see where NASA's thinking now of getting rid of the shuttle by 2011?
Yes, I've heard that story. I've also heard another story that it may be much sooner, and maybe in the next week or two when we do another update, I can fill you in on some of our sources that are giving us a little different perspective, George.
Richard, we're going to go now to another person whom I admire greatly. He is a world-renowned author. He is a host in his own right on Dreamland. He is married to a wonderful woman by the name of Anne, and he wants to wish you a happy birthday, Whitley Strieber. Hi, Whitley. How are you?
Well, first of all, 61 is the new 41. So, Richard, welcome to the next 20 years of your life.
You know, you're absolutely right, Whit. I was thinking earlier tonight, every time, you know, we have one of these things once a year, you kind of take stock of your life and where you are and how you feel and what you've done and what you want to do. And it's really true. All of us in this generation, you, me, Art, George, we're really about 20 years younger phenomenologically than our parents or our grandparents. I mean, I remember my dad at my age, and he was not doing the things I'm doing, not because he didn't want to, but because he basically couldn't. And when I think of my grandfather, you know, I see him in the same light. The physics, as I've said on this show many times, is changing, and we are actually all a lot younger biologically than our chronological ages, and thank God for that, because I have a heck of a lot left to do that I'm going to do.
Well, you still have more hair than I do. In fact, you're dead right, and there is a lot going on. You know, I was thinking earlier when I found out I was going to be on tonight of the first time we met at Marco Adler's apartment back in...
Oh, my God, that's a lifetime ago.
Fall of 1985, and this very good-looking guy was there showing an incredibly articulate man with these amazing pictures of Sidonia, photographs.
You know what I remember with is our lunch at the Oyster Bar at Grand Central, and then you and I going on the train to Connecticut to pick up your car, and we had the most extraordinary conversation leaving New York and coming back in.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing that's interesting about that is it was after my close encounter experience had started, but before I consciously remembered them. And the meeting with you and the seeing of the Mars photographs was part of it somehow.
Well, you know, when I designed the cover of the first edition of Monuments, I specifically asked Kinthea and Dan Drayson to create a cover for me that would kind of reach into the primordial soul of people and maybe stir some echoes of memory, because I had a very strong intuition then that this was somehow part of our cultural existence, and that we have this incredible collective amnesia, as Graham Hancock says, and we simply don't, a lot of us don't want to remember that this is important. And apparently,
well,
in your case, it worked.
I don't think, if I hadn't met you, that I ever would have been able to bring the experience I was having into consciousness. I think it was an essential meeting.
Wow.
And I'll never forget it. And incidentally, I've just recently been in contact with some of the guys who were in the National Security Agency at that time who analyzed the Mars photographs for me originally. And they're saying something I'm hoping to get them to be more public about, that the face, that particular part of Mars was changed. What was taken by the Viking is not the same as the more recent imagery. That the actual ground, what was happening on the ground, has been altered.
Now, you got this from these guys, or this is your perception?
No, I got it from these guys just recently, and I said, my first word was, well, A, give me proof, and B, let's go public with it. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Well, obviously, I want to see the evidence. Kinthea has done a very careful analysis point by point between the new data and the Viking data, and she'd give you a run for your money there, because she argues that it hasn't changed. It's basically, we now have... Do you realize that Sidonia is the most photographed spot on Mars of any place on the planet, and that planet has a surface area equivalent to Africa? If NASA's not interested, why have they taken over 20 photos with different spacecraft, different lighting, different cameras of the face on Mars alone?
Good point. Good point.
Of course they're interested.
Of course.
Well, we're going to take some more calls for you, Richard. Whitley, I want to thank you for participating in his birthday, and we're going to be talking to you pretty soon because of some of the new work you've been doing.
Well, thanks very much, and happy birthday, Richard. Thank you for being with us, Guy.
Thank you, Whitley, and please say hi to Ann for me.
Sounds like a who's who in a coast-to-coast legend, Richard.
How did you assemble this little surprise?
Oh, it wasn't difficult for you, Mr. Olgren. It wasn't difficult. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Steve from Huron, South Dakota.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling
oh,
in.
Oh, my God,
happy
Steve.
Birthday, Richard. I've got to say, Richard Hoagland has been my mentor since 1994. I've worked extensively with him through the years on the lunar anomaly issues. And Mr. Hoagland taught me long ago how to look at NASA photographs. And he got me interested in this area. And here's to him. And hoping that there's many more years of fruitful discovery and partnership.
Steve, I got to say that of all the people I've worked with, you're one of the best, and you definitely brought a level of professionalism to this inquiry that few people that I have met in my travels have been able to bring, and my hat's off to you, my friend.
No, thank you, sir. You know, Richard exemplifies the term young at heart. And because he has the tenacious spirit of wanting to know and searches for the truth endlessly, he'll be forever young.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. You know, Richard, I told you this when we got together once, that when I used to listen to you and Art, when I wasn't even associated with Coast to Coast, I used to say to myself, gosh, what a great interview this guy is. I wish I could get him on my local show. And Now I can't get you off. But of all the guests that I inherited when I came to Coast to Coast, you were the one for me was just, it made me realize the significance of this program. It made me realize just how far-reaching Coast to Coast really is, because I was pinching myself on that first interview almost 5 years ago, by the way, which is my anniversary is this Friday, if you believe that.
Oh, my God, is it that long?
Yeah, 5 years since I was associated with Coast to Coast when I was filling in for, and this is how old this thing gets, I was filling in for Ian and Art at that time. But I would pinch myself, behind the scenes going, I'm talking to Richard C. Hoagland. Mm.
And see, George, you got to be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, that's
be
true.
Very careful.
And here you are now. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, hi. This is Donna from Seattle.
Hi, Donna.
I wanted to wish Richard a happy birthday. Richard, you're actually the guest on Art Bell's show that got me hooked onto the show. Like,
how about
oh my!
That?
I was working late one night, and it was really quiet, so I just turned on the radio, and I heard you talking. I think you were talking about NASA and Mars, and you were your conversation was so different from any other show I've heard, so I stopped and thought, who is this guy? But you got me absolutely hooked on the show. You really did, and I want to thank you. And my favorite all-time show with you is the one with Old Navy. Old Navy.
Oh, Sport. I knew you were going to say that. That's
yeah, I love
Art's
that
favorite.
One.
You know that
birthday.
When Art actually got a bunch of calls the next day, you know, half of them saying I was nuts and half of them saying, you know, that they had made calls and they had found there was a secret, you know, phone system and there was all kinds of very intriguing behind-the-scenes stuff that no one knew about, and he was blown away that we'd inadvertently tripped over some. Oh, now, you got to see this, guys. Robin just opened my office door and brought in a tray with strawberry rhubarb pie and a candle in the middle, singing his little heart out.
And Stanton Friedman with a birthday hat on. Oh, there it is.
You hear that? You guys all conspired. Come on. Yes. This is a conspiracy, right?
Yeah, well, you never know, Richard. I remember I was driving around one very late night into an early morning hour, and you and Art were talking to each other, and you were talking about an underground city that may have been covered, but you were showing pictures. Now, I'm in my car, so you're painting pictures for me of the fact that the city is under sand or something. And all of a sudden, I remember hearing Art in that mysterious voice of his with the way he can pause for a moment. And he went, oh, my God, Richard. And then he went to a break. and it kept me riveted.
Well, sometimes he sees things and sometimes he doesn't. And that was one of the pieces of data that he saw.
Well, my friend, I want to wish you a happy birthday. And as you know, I only mentioned one time how
one
old
time.
You are. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
And I hope many more, Richard. You're a fixture of Coast to Coast, my friend.
I was hoping I would see you in San Francisco this coming weekend, but I guess that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know. The birthday's not over yet, Richard.
Okay, so there might be surprises.
Go up to the enterprisemission.com website. Richard C. Hoagland does have a major, and I'm telling you, a major conference that you can participate in. You can get all the information off his website, and his better half, Robin Falkov, will be there as well. She'll be speaking on alternative health and medicine. And once again, happy birthday on behalf of everyone at Coast to Coast to you, Richard C. Hoagland. I'll be back.